On Monday night, I was in the basement here at church when someone asked a tough question, one of those tough questions you just hate. A little context first. There's this newish book club at Ascension where we take a challenging book, read it, and then discuss it over a potluck. The potluck's the best part. Last spring, we tackled two fantastic books on race. And last week, we were talking about a book written by Sue Klebold, the mother of Dylan Klebold, one of the murderers in the Columbine massacre. Reading and discussing this book was sad and it was frightening, especially because the book offers no clear reason for that awful day in 1999. There were a dozen or so of us split between two tables in the basement. As we were nearing the end of the discussion, we were talking about how, despite having a loving family and friends, Dylan Klebold felt isolated leading up to the massacre. And that's when someone said, "I have a question. I think I know the answer, but I'm curious what you think." And then she looked at me. Oh no, I thought. I could tell immediately that this was one of those tough questions I'd struggle to answer, and she's probably wanting a pastory answer too. As I listened, I noticed everyone else around the table exhaled a sigh of relief that the question wasn't being asked of them. Some of those stinkers even took another bite of dessert. The question: is it possible to have a society where people aren't left feeling like Dylan did? A society where people aren't alone in their struggle so that things like Columbine don't happen? Is that possible? Ugh. Some questions are hard. Hard because we don't know the answer, even though we really, really want to know. What exactly happens after we die? Why is there things like cancer? When is a good time to try and drive up I-25? You just don't know. But other questions are hard because we do know the answer, we just don't like it. We don't want to admit it, but we don't want to admit the truth, rather, but it seems there's no way around it. Sir, your credit card didn't go through. Should I try it again? Is there any way that hurricane might not hit the city? Is there a good time to drive on I-25? Is it possible to have a society where no one is alone in their struggle, but all are cared for? Despite our efforts to add qualifiers and state our wishes, the answer to these questions is a reluctant no. That tough question on Monday night is actually, in some ways, the question I think those seven churches were asking nearly 2,000 years ago. The seven churches this letter we call Revelation was written to, these churches were all wondering about the hopes of their faith meeting the tough realities of this world. Some were being persecuted and some were siding with Rome to avoid persecution, but all had hoped that this new community of Christians would enable them to build a different sort of society. They had hoped they could create a society where the struggles of this world could be overcome or avoided altogether, a society where greed and violence were unheard of and where no one was left alone in their sickness, in their grief, in their suffering. A society that felt a little like the Garden of Eden, I suppose, the way God wanted the world to be. They'd hoped they could build that society. But as time wore on, things got harder, not easier. What the heck? Worse, not only were they unable to transform society into a Garden of Eden, it seemed being part of the Christian community made life worse, not better. Ostracized, persecuted, scared. This wasn't what they had in mind. Now, these churches weren't the first or the last to imagine making a new society based on their faith. Some groups have figured they could pull it off by removing themselves away from the rest of the world, only to discover that the greed and lust and sin wasn't limited to some outside them, but was within us. The founding of our country, let's be honest, has a bit of this thinking in it too. This idea that we could build a brave new world on uninhabited land. Except, of course, that it wasn't uninhabited, and those who did the building weren't exactly pleased to be doing so. So much for manifest destiny in the American experiment, right? Later, Christian groups would try it again through strict rules. Drinking, gambling, and secular music were eliminated, an idea that seems naive now. Strict rules eventually gave way to suburbs of like-minded folks. Surely in a nice place like this, we thought, we could build a community that would be free, at least of that violence that plagues everywhere else. And then Columbine. Is it possible to build a society where no one is left alone in their struggle? A place without bullying, and where all sad or sick people are cared for, and where we always look out for one another instead of having to look over our shoulders? Is it possible to build a society without greed, or one without lust, or hatred, or tribalism, or violence, or poverty, or isolation? If we look back through history, if we look at the state of our world and maybe the state of our neighborhood, we know the answer is no. We just don't want to admit it. Because then what? Would our efforts suddenly feel pointless? Would we still bother with the tireless struggles and donations to nonprofits and neighborhood watch committees and volunteering at the local school? If the answer really is no, and if we'd admit that the answer was no, would we keep trying? At what point does Sisyphus just give up? Beat down and doubting, each of these seven churches receives a strange letter in the mail. A letter with dragons and horsemen and beasts and fallen angels. The letter uses these fantastic visions to tell about a world gone to hell in a handbasket. And then right before it feels too late, God steps in, reminding them that they aren't left to their suffering, that God is not beaten. Again and again, these visions tell the story of God still present and fighting evil and doing good. I imagine being in one of those churches and reading that strange letter, and at each point in the fantastic calamity, thinking to myself, yes, this is what it feels like. And then feeling a twinge of hope as God steps in again and again. I hope it would lift me up. But then I also imagine, after reading two or three of these cycles, I imagine thinking, is this how it's always going to be? God with us, helping us through the troubled times, the suffering, even defeating the evil surrounding us, only to see it rise up again. Will there ever be a final release from it all? A true liberation? And then I imagine reading this final vision, this final chapters of the book. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, see, the home of God is among mortals. Death will be no more. Mourning, crying, and pain will be no more. I am making all things new. New. That's what I would have been hoping for were I sitting in one of those seven churches reading this strange letter. New. A new society. That's what I was kind of hoping I could say to the question about Columbine on Monday night. The question that was really about more than Columbine. New. A new world. That's what we all long for. When the winds howl and the water falls and the flames burn and the threat of war rages and crime terrifies and grief drowns us, we long for a new world. One without tears and mourning and death and pain. A new world, the sort we've never been able to create on our own. And there it is, in the final pages of the Bible. I saw a new heaven and a new earth coming down out of heaven from God. The vision is bittersweet. Sweet because it's exactly what we've always wanted. Bitter because it sounds like it's a long ways off, doesn't it? This promise is for the future, the distant future. If there's any part of Revelation that really does have to do with end times, this is it. When the sun explodes or the bombs kill us all or the universe collapses in on itself, God will bring about a new world. And I believe in playing the long game, but sheesh, is this supposed to be our hope? Now there's a question I can finally say yes to. And more than hope, may it give us faith and courage too. Because though the vision is in the distance, it promises that God's will for our world will come to pass. And it promises that this is God's will for us. A world, a life without heartache and pain, and all that stuff that made us so sad reading about Columbine. Just to know that the cry of the poor has become God's own cry, that our hunger and thirst for justice has God's own desire, that our longing is God's longing, just to know that gives me hope. And then I suddenly see little glimmers of this new world, little flashes of it here and there, like deja vu, but in reverse. Seeing something I've never seen before, but knowing I'll see it again. I see it watching each of you around this table, or hearing about two former lost boys of Sudan becoming missionaries in their old land, or watching our organist teach kids about praising God through music, or blessing quilts 2 weeks before that, quilts which go out all across this world, glimmers of the new world, foretastes of the feast to come. I see it in teachers' cars pulled up to the school parking lot at 8 a.m., 2 weeks before school even starts, and old women being picked up by their nieces to go grocery shopping, and new kids being welcomed into old friend groups, and Texans paddling strangers and their cats in a canoe. That new world is a long ways off, and we can't make it come any earlier. But when I see little glimmers of it breaking into this world, I'm filled with joy and hope and faith and courage. And I come to see that my distress and my despair were because I thought I could bring about this brave new world. I thought I had the strength. I thought we had the wisdom. I thought it all, even though I knew I was wrong. But when I see these glimmers, I realize that even without this new society I've so longed for, little tastes appear here and there, sometimes even in big ways. And I realize that I'm not responsible for them. God brings them about, sneaks into our world of woe to give us a bit of the future, to pull us into that future. And all we can do is point to these flashes, spread hope and joy, and say, "Wow, did you see that?" And then, summoning the only courage required of us, we offer ourselves to God as vehicles through which God might use to do this work. When that tough question was asked of me last week, I hemmed and hawed and said something uninspiring. Were I to answer again, I'd say no. We're not going to bring about that golden world or society, shoot, even a golden neighborhood. The darkness of this world is with us, and we cannot extinguish it. But there will come a day when God will. A day when a new society, a new world will come. And in the meantime, wow, do you see it? A light is shining from that world into our own. Isn't it beautiful? Amen.